longer needed good. So the compensation is, instead of manifesting out of the atoms a spoken word, like you say to the mountain, move, and move, you can now say to the mountain of emotions, move, and they would move from inside of you. So you direct the spoken word to the emotional makeup of yourself instead to the environmental makeup, because the environmental makeup would force you to recognize what would you do with the residue after you've manifested.
Well, can you reach a point where you've gone through the karma base, taken the responsibility, and then you can do those same things, but now you don't do it in the same way?
That's right.
In other words, you have control now.
No, Jesus came and made wine at a wedding, and yet the man who was the host or the governor or the taster of the wine said to the person, how come you give the best wine now? And normally you give the best wine first and the lousy wine last. And here you gave us the best wine last and the lousy wine first. The question is, did Jesus make wine or grape juice, or he enhanced the wine that was already there?
The wine was gone. He needed more.
Uh-huh.
He had to make wine.
So if he made it, then the complaint would be, why did you serve us the good wine last?
Because he made a better wine.
That's the question. Did he make a better wine, or did he enhance the wine that was there, that was no longer available to drink, but out of the bottles that were there in the water, he enhanced it as wine. To give them a comparison of the two types of reactions in their system of what wine is supposed to taste like or be.
Okay.
It's easy to make the wine and they have a comment. There shouldn't be no comment to the wine. Wine is wine. But why would he make better wine than the one they had before? Why didn't he make the same flavor, the same consistency, and therefore not having to have the comment thrown out? Now, if you say he made the same thing without any comment, one can say that the people were a victim of imaginational hypnosis. If the comment came, then they weren't a victim of imaginational hypnosis. They were definitely a transitional action demanding recognition of the substance that was available for them to use. Equally true, the scraps from the fish and the bread would be sufficient evidence that they weren't hypnotizing themselves into believing they were eating bread simply because this man has the capacity to befuddle their minds. He wanted them to clean up the garbage and then find a place to dispose it. Because in the other process, if you manifest something, you're still going to have the residue. Then where do you do it? Or what do you do with it? Where do you put it? So your mind is always going to question, am I a victim of hypnosis, illusion, or am I really seeing an atomic emanation or enhancement by the spoken word? Unless we don't have some tangible way to evaluate the residual action of the act, we don't know if it's valid or it's just not a figment of our imagination. We have to go through that.
Maybe making too much of it in trying to visualize, you know, energy going up and then the energy cooling up and stuff. I mean, I get the feeling that doing it, and at times I think, oops, I plugged out right here, and then I kind of remember it. It was stuck about here or something. I probably shouldn't have to go to all that trouble. Just more or less, you're just talking about ups and downs.
Now let me explain something. Your intellect will fool you in reference to the bioaction of the tissues in the respiration and make you believe that the energy stopped here and didn't go up. It's not valid. The mere fact that you breathe and associate with the movement is traveling at the speed of light. So how can it stop at any place? Is that your intellectual association in terms of the respiration may make you feel that it stopped someplace, when in actuality it's going up cool and coming down warm at the speed of light inside of the tissues. And your identification is your conscious association. You are not in essence moving it. You are in essence being conscious of its existence going on in you and not aware of the temperature. So you're made conscious of it by identifying it and by doing the breath. In the end, you'll turn out looking at yourself already operating in those fields as you become more conscious that you're not doing a single thing. Your intellect cannot do anything in the atoms. But it will fool itself and live through every sensation of being responsible, capable, and incompetent. When in actuality, none of those three are going on with the intellect. The biological functions are already going on at the subliminal level of your mechanism and are not waiting for you to come along and tabulate it. So nature set up the yawn as an exhaust release valve in the organism for this particular function to go on, regardless you're asleep or awake. What the teacher is asking us to do, that is a realized consciousness, is that we identify with it by becoming conscious of its movement. But we can't do anything to stop it or start it. But in the identification, we have to have some awareness of its mechanics so that we will feel we are participating in it. But when in actuality, you don't breathe, and I don't breathe, it's pushed into our nostril by the 14.7 pounds pressure in the environment the moment it cut the cord. But if I don't synchronize, and the I doesn't imply individuality, the I implies the unified principle of the mechanism constricting and dilating on time to its own pressurization from outside, it will not hold. But if it does synchronize with its own pressurization to constrict and dilate on time, it will hold. So the Eastern philosophers refer to that as karma, cause-effect, relativity, or yin-yang. In today's chemical application or biological application, it is strictly constriction and dilation of the cellular mass to the rhythm of the pressure. And you can do that by your own hands constricting and dilating and see the resonance go on in it. You can hook up a device, it's called a microsonic device, where you put it to the skin and it will beam on a lamp. You come to my clinic, you see there's a lamp there that has a, when you play any music, it lights up. That's exactly what it is. And you can have them hook onto the skin and you can constrict and dilate and breathe and it will light up to the rhythm of the skin giving off its own sonics. So that's how sensitive this body can be measured now. And to indicate to the person if they are in rhythm as it's hooked up. They can watch if they're out of rhythm with it, because the colors will either get too light or too dark or too long or too short. So if there is a correct rhythm, it will stay stationary as they breathe on the screen. And allowing the body to have its own internal rejuvenation at its own internal rhythm and speed, and therefore you are in essence unifying or identifying with it. And this is the cellular healing. So the yogis have recognized this over the years, and they have to deal with toxic bodies, so they spend long, long hours closing the eyes to slow it down to identify. We have machines which are called the mind mirror or EGG. These are all machines that are showing you left brain, right brain oscillation of either too fast, too slow, to bring it back to a normal pitch for your cellular alignment. Modern man has developed equipment to monitor his inward accomplishment and mastery over his glandular system. Ancient man didn't have that technological approach, but he had the ramifications and the reinforcement of the teacher ever so often giving him a booster charge to stay within the framework of it. Then with the equipment, you can combine both and measure yourself. So today now, the purpose of meditation is to be the same, which they call saint. That means you're not going to go crazy no more over fixations, and take care of your liabilities and be a student, the ongoing process of living. So they call it the saint millionaire student. You're never going to stop learning, as every wise man will tell you. The more he learns, the more he finally don't know nothing. And the more he tries to keep doing it, it costs him to live. And the more it costs him to live, he's going to either stay sane or insane. So in the end, he ends up doing what? Living the moment. See? And therefore, we become conscious of ourselves in the now.
So, Don, or words, when you say say what you mean, if you're going to live in the now, in the moment, most of the words that we use, the terminology that's been kind of programmed on this planet, is in a linear past, future, it's not of now time. So if we change that in our verbals, in our thinking, that's, and does it also mean not saying things that you don't follow through on? In other words, everything you say, you have to be conscious.
Correct. But the question is this. It's easy to say because you're programmed to repeat language. The fact of now is non-rehearsal. It's an experiential moment, having no rehearsing function inside of it. So you can only act spontaneously in terms of a survival for now. Any other condition is an evaluation, observation, if it's going to be practical or impractical, and that's tomorrow or yesterday. That's why it's linear from that standpoint, but as far as the momentum which is now, you can't rehearse that. As the conditions come up and you try to explain yourself in reference to the condition, the words are coming out of your mouth in a moment. If you were to stop the brain and say, I'm going to say this in the next few seconds, and I'm going to say this, that would be totally different. But you have to talk and have this particular programming work to fit what you say in order to be understood. This is all experiential and not rehearsal. So if that's where you live now, you can't live tomorrow.
Good night, Jeremy.
I'm experiencing the here and now in reference past experience, whether they were here now, I mean, here now experience, point of reference for this tree now experience. I've got it. If I stop looking back to the past and just live in here now, it's like experiencing everything all over again, or experiencing everything at once.
No. Here and now can only give you a sense of consciousness, which is like a video camera focused upon the audience and recording it, but not telling which person in the audience is a star or a non-star. The person who have to talk to identify that there's some a separate function. All the camera can do is photograph. And that's the here and now in everybody. It's the photographic function of your consciousness that is going on in the now. But the monitoring and analysis is something different. That will take on time tomorrow or yesterday. But as far as the now is concerned, now is strictly a photographic function. You are looking at me, but your brain is recording it. And if this was the first time, it will record it as you hear it. Then the next time you'll recognize me when you see me. But every time you meet the person for the first time, there is no reference of any storage of happening. It's strictly a camera recording. Then after it's recorded in the exposure, you have the brain telling you what you're looking for. Now, if you didn't see me and you only heard my voice, like a blind person would, the very first time, they would be guided by the hearing, and then from then on, they will be interreacting on the resonance of the voice and say, that's a banner. But because if they're not identifying me by what they see, they're identifying me by what they hear. Okay. So these are functions that are all photographing and recording. So that's why the now principle is different in terms of consciousness being a principle that analyzes.
Just your experience.
Yes, your experience.
So how would you recognize anybody then if you're in that state most of the time? Where would the individuality come? Is it part of that cycle that you talked about where it phases in and phases out?
Yes.
So that you would see us as individuals, but in the next moment, we're just one big show. We don't have, no one's separate.
That's right.
And then we phase in again.
That's right.
And
because
and
you breathe.
So, and do you have any control over that? Oh, so it just goes on all day,
yeah.
In out, in out.
That's what you just said in the simple words. Not come the Father but by me. In no way we can ever monitor or regulate it unless we surrender to this internal will. And even he had to say, not my will but thy will be done.
So if we're in an individual state looking for that contact from you and you're in that phase of non-individuality, we're not going to feel that contact, right?
Right. So it's not my will. But
no.
Your will be done, and that's the creative consciousness inside of you that is opening you up to yourself.
When everybody wakes up, are they on the same phase, same cycle? Oh,
yeah.
They are. So we'd be in the same thing.
The same thing.
Oh.
That's why you can only love your neighbor as yourself, not like yourself. Like yourself is possessiveness, separateness, and attachment. As yourself is you interfacing back on it, the own atom in a reflective state. You're looking at yourself right over here, but it may appear as a dano because of the particular fixation pattern already stored in the brain to relate to a dano here. But if you were phasing off of that fixation, what you see in here is your own self as a mirror. And then this happened to me years ago when I fell off the building. I saw all the things around me. I didn't see the individuality. I just saw myself in all these different things. So after that, I enjoy going to airports and different places just to see myself walking around.
Does that mean they don't see the personality problems? They just see behind the mask?
No. When anytime you're looking for the personality or the individuality, this is your own fixation. Now, if you slow the brain down, all of it disappears. Though each one is like there are two women, one man, two women, another woman, one man. I may be looking at that, but yet, if I keep looking, I don't see you inside of you, or her inside of her, or him inside of him, or her. What I'm seeing is myself looking back at me in that particular form, because my carbon dioxide has just become your oxygen, and your carbon dioxide has just become my oxygen. So we can't be separated no more. I am really looking at what?
Yourself.
And myself back inside of a form that is thinking and communicating via the oxygenation.
So we could accept that state full on. There we are. We've got it. So the only thing that can change it is if we create a mental fixation.
That's right.
From this point on.
And that's where they use the word attachment is the cause of the suffering. And detachment is the freedom. Free men all, Lord of themselves. And if you look inside of your structure and how the laws are operating, then you have the freedom. And the freedom simply means you will see yourself looking back at yourself via the other organism. In other words, it's like a sort of a Xerox copy. Though I know you individually, and though I relate to you individually from the standpoint of my relative self, if I slow down from that relative self, who do I see? I see myself in many, many, many selves.
All selves.
No, all right. But then, here comes the other condition, which we call darshan. What's happening now? You feel it, I feel it, or what? Do you feel a certain shift in the whole room? That's what darshan is. Because I went right to your delta level, which you may not identify within your own brain, because you haven't spent enough time to slow down your own brain to shift from your identity to your unity of life, which is me and you interrelating at the delta level. So darshan means whole sight or whole reaction or unified awareness, allows you to sense everything at the gutter level. But what you felt after I shifted into it was a certain like a wave went through the roof or a cool feeling. But that's because I came through you in the air at the speed of light to resonate at your delta level inside of you. But this is your own delta level. If you can stay in there and slow down the brain, you will be in that delta level. And that's why the yogis will say, what is all the knowledge in all the books in comparison to 50 minutes silence in the soul? It took me a long time to get there. But when I got in there, every other swami or realized person can synchronize because it's a unified field. And that's how come Swami Anand came, and when he walked in the room, he said, I'm going to make you a swami. That really blew my ecstatic mind. Well, that makes me now a nobody. Because they say swamis are supposed to be renowned. He said, no, I'm going to make you a swami. But this is what can freak out a person, because they are not aware of what their subliminal nature is. They're too overlapped to the conscious cellular identity of now, what I am supposed to be in reference to my friend.
The fixation of the who.
Yeah. And not the what. So what you're trying to experience is not who you are, is what you are when you close your eyes. But you don't want to get sedated in it, because that's not really where it will be. You want to be alive in it, so the way you open your eyes and get it to move, the what in you moves you instead of the who moves you. It's like this cassette. It's totally useless if we don't have that plug going into that wall socket. Now, if they don't pay the electrical bill, no matter how long you stuck it there, it's not going to go down. You see? That's exactly the same thing. The cassette is not going to go nowhere. It depends upon how they pay the electrical bill. That's the same phenomenon inside of you. That is the unified field. You have to slow your brain down to become conscious that you and the unified field are one and the same. Then you don't feel threatened of having an identity or an individuality to relate to and call it ego, because that wouldn't take priority anymore. What will take priority is your unified consciousness, the electrical nature of you. That takes priority, and that's your respiratory rate. So as you slow down, what we were doing when we breathe fast and breathe slow and then to feel the rest, that is to take priority over what you call yourself. And so when you started to laugh or giggle or yawn, these were the unified functions that you were trying to identify with. After a while, you notice that at that level, there is no language of any type of communication that enhances our wisdom, because it seems so ridiculous to be talking words that isn't going to, these words are not going to do anything more than what? Get us more frustrated. So we end up doing what? Making emotional sounds at a unified field. But I am a Dalai, oh heck no. That's really, you see, that part of it doesn't, because I'm sound asleep, a Dalai can you do nothing. But when I'm sound asleep, somebody next to me will say, well, you were groaning and moaning and in your sleep, you know. Did anybody tell you last night that you were moaning in your sleep or groaning in your sleep? Or you? So you're kind of puzzled. You don't hear yourself moaning and groaning in your sleep. But the person next to you, well, you may say, I don't believe it. Then what I used to do years ago, we had a class, we used to hear these fellows all come in the room and they go into meditation. And I put on the tape and record all the songs that they were making during the entire period. And then when it's all over, they get up and say, well, we didn't see nothing, we didn't hear nothing, I don't know what happened. I said, fine, now you want to hear what went on when you were sound asleep? Then I turn it on. And then you hear the ones of moaning and the groaning. Snoring and making statements in the sleep. I mean, the one person says, did I say that? Yeah. You see? But that's how we begin to realize there's a differential between your personal identity and the internal unity with the breath as a principle that keeps you functioning. Now, the test is to not to become unconscious and therefore to retain that sense of consciousness. It's very subtle. When you get it almost there and not to lose it, and then to hear your nose and your body do, and then you listen to it. Somebody walk in the room. He's snoring. You look up there, not yet. But they hear you snoring. And then they say, hey, he's not asleep, but you open your eyes. No, I'm not sleeping, I'm just practicing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, anyone that cares can give you.
This is an unusual approach to modify and eliminate the traumatic actions of the father and the mother who are the donors of the sperm and ovum in your body. We've searched for centuries to find a way back through all the different techniques, and none of the teachers really come out openly and say, what is enlightenment, other than it's a emergence with God. Had they spoken right straight off the bat in the functional makeup of the human body, many of us would have merged into it a long time. But there was a reason why they couldn't. Many of your early men who were teachers were originally wealthy kings who abused life and then got sick and had no way to correct their sickness, and avoiding disgrace, they walk away from their thrones and their possessions, leaving it to heirs to pursue some type of a repentance. And in that process, they discover their health back. And then they remain away from society in order to feel the compassionate nature for their mistakes. Those who discovered them were also in the same predicament, being sick, abused in various ways, and then they got some insight into their own problems and got well. This has been the original approach for centuries, man finding his way back to health, which we call enlightenment or going back to God. But to keep the program going, they had to build up certain rules around it for what is called a longevity lifestyle or non-decomposing mechanism, which is already set up in the DNAs and RNAs of your body. You don't make immortality. Immortality is you already. The butterfly isn't a result of some magic. It's already set up to emerge out of a caterpillar, just as much as you are set up to live consciously 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, self-perpetuating, rejuvenating yourself. You may not like it, but you're stuck with it. So, for that reason, we come to the reality, how can we benefit in this technological universe that we are approaching more and more? What are we doing here? Is it to eat, sleep, and die? Or are we here to reclaim our internal heritage? And that is the moment the sperm bonded to the ovum and ignited the conceptive reaction between the DNAs and RNAs and triggered the atoms to form you. It's not an easy journey because it does create a lot of anguish due to the fact that you have an intellect to contend with, and you have the anguish of the unexpected. If you were evolving from 100 years down to 1, would have no anguish. But you're evolving from 9 months up to 100 years, so you have anguish. And that's why going back to the experience of the sperm bonding with the ovum is a memory already locked up in your cells. There is no intellect there. There's only emotion, intuition, and senses. And then chemical, electrical, magnetic. Intellect is a brakes on the experience. The more you rely on the intellect, the longer you keep away the experience of remembering it. the more you let go of the intellect, the faster you merge into it. But the emergence is unexpected, it's uncalculated, and it takes you by surprise. Therefore, you can't wander off in nebulous thinking. You have to watch. That's why they call it Jehovah's Witness. Music has been found to be the means of getting back there very fast. But we had no instrument to accomplish it. It is known that the Fountain of Youth is in the world someplace. Ponce de Leon went looking for it when he was told by the oracles it's in the New World. He came all the way in the New World, and then he was even told by the oracles that he must find the golden violin. But he never found it, because he didn't know where the Fountain of Youth was. The Fountain of Youth is the timeless gland in your human body. It resonates to a resonance or music, providing the musical note can be held a certain length of time to bring about a balance to phase down the aging function of the cells. When Kitaro discovered the synthesizer and made music, he played art. The music that we play or you hear is not intended for art. It's intended for therapy. There's a vast difference between the two. Those who compose music know that you can lift the emotions of the human brain and lower it to the extent that the composer wants to go with his own feelings. So when you hear a composer composing music, you're feeling his emotional anguish, joy, within his written music. But when you're dealing with therapy, there is no personality involved in it. It's strictly lined up to put you back into a sense of now. And that sense of now is the moment when the sperm bonded to the ovum. And that's your pH factor, and that's your homeostasis, and that is your focal point of frequency where your tongue lines up to command the atoms. That's why when Jesus said, the things I do, you do also, and greater things shall you do, he was inferring, deep down within your structure, you are at the atomic control by the human voice. What we are trying to bring about in this is to close the gap of the time spent in long hours practicing meditation. And practicing meditation is this. Living meditation is this.
That's living meditation.
So the rub away is a conscious contact to get you to interrelate with your emotional feelings and your intellect. And what we can do with this music is to let you hear the first side involving the sperm in the father, all his anguish, frustrations, and expectations played out. So we're going to go up the 7 movements in the father. The first one is the base of the spine. Young boy, getting ready to go to war, do whatever he wants to do, and break out from mom and papa. And then he's going to feel that he's big macho. Then he's going to feel that he's got to have some way to establish his identity, to earn a livelihood. Then he's got to discover the inward bonding, and then discover how the broken promises he made to himself are released. And finally, come to the commitment of living a life of compassion. equally true, the ovum is set up like that in the woman. That's your mother. And then you go right up to the point where the sperm and ovum bonds in you. So inside one, there will be 7 movements, and inside two, there will be 9 movements, working through the endocrine gland of your father and your mother, and then the inner bonding of the conception pattern. We'll be touching and moving different actions to interrelate in the body. So when we turn the music on, if you feel the urge to get up and move, move. If you don't feel the urge, you want to sit down, fine. But whatever you feel coming up from within you, that part of the music is your father's emotional stresses, anguish and joy and expectation working through your mechanism. Then we have some more intricate workouts. You're ready to enjoy it. Okay?
Yes. Can I ask you, like at home when I listen to the tape, I find that I'm more drawn to the old side. Like I very seldom listen to the term side.
Very true.
And I'm just sort of wondering why that is.
The mother is the matrix where the sperm is deposited, and every human being will feel a tendency for the ovum side because it is constricting. The sperm is dilating. In the Chinese concept is that yin yang, meaning in English for us here in the Western world, is that life constricts and dilates to make union. So you being a female composed of a sperm and an ovum operating on the female frequency, you will feel the tendency for more inward constriction. A male will feel a tendency for more outward dilation. But both of us, male or female, are composed of a sperm ovum. The tendencies would be only because of the frequencies we identify in. So if you feel a drawn to the ovum, it's the synchronicity frequency of being in the female body. Now Krishna would say both bodies having the same matrix must learn to operate as one body. So to be in the world and not of the world is to have both patterns operating in proper balance. You're never giving preference to one or the other. And that is what realization is, not giving. Because the sperm moves to meet the ovum and they bond to make the union. One doesn't take preference of the other. But then the frequencies are set to be either a male body or a female body. So in either one of the two bodies, the bonding and the polarity is followed. So some of us may feel attached to the father, and some may be attached to the mother. That's all right. In your particular frequency as a female body, you'll draw more to the ovum. Men will feel drawn to their father. But that's okay.
So I feel more drawn to the sperm side. And I'm,
That's all right. That's all right. Some men are drawn to the ovum side, some women are drawn to the sperm. This is all preferential functions going on in the body. But that is also an indicator of the traumatic action in the body, the different traumas that took place from the mother or from the father that will take that particular time. But then you see there are other ways to validate that by checking it in colors and musical whistle, and this is many other ways we look to validate that, but that is an actual preferential movement going on. What we're trying to establish, though, is to free you from this feedback.
So it's good to listen to the one that makes you
crazy. So that it is. But look at it this way. It could be worse never to have the opportunity to live it. That's where it's worse. Now that you have the opportunity to live it, it's fine. Yeah?
I'm sorry, what are the number 8 and 9 energy systems on the second side? What Anderson, what there's 7 on side 1 and 9 on side 2?
Yeah.
What's 8 and 9 on side 2?
Those are the bonding. The sperm is deposited in the mother, it's not deposited in the father. The mother has the basic 7, just like the father has the basic 7, but then the two forms of life have to bond, and then the unification leading to a fetus formation. So conception, then pregnancy, then delivery. We'll go through it as we, but I'll be directing you to relate to them. Okay. You can get up and move and feel, and then we'll put you in different patterns of movements in the body. Yeah.
I said my geometry actually kind of hit something, because I started thinking, well, how is this different from Rig Veda or Sama Veda that you listen to, which I've been listening for many years, or the Bhagavad Gita, the Guru Gita? Like, somehow they were supposed to all take you within and, you know, touch the unified state. And so, like, sometimes when I'm listening to the music, like, I still flow within the flow of it, and yet my geometry would say, well, how do I know for sure that this is really releasing all?
First, you gotta look at one thing. What are you releasing? Then you listen to the music.
Well, my idea is that this DNA problem that comes from the parent is what I think. Releasing geometry.
The geometry is only going to be there in reference to what the eyes picked up. And then the label of the alphabet will come from the programming after they cut the cord and they teach you to talk and read. Then the new numbers are going to be the value rates. And music is one type of frequency and resonance that cuts right across like a sort of an eraser. That allows you to break all geometry, all labels, and all numbers, to where it reaches a state of intensity. Now, intensity doesn't have geometry. It doesn't have label, or alphabet, or number. But it has acceleration. The more it accelerates, the more it will cure. Well, that's a bad term. It will eliminate the stress levels of the mechanism. So whatever you feel that is coming from the past as the geometry will sooner or later start erasing out of the brain. And then they don't have any effect. Because the end result of the experience is seeing through the wall, right back into the atom. You may call it third eye vision, you may call it clairvoyant, but it's a normal function by which you were born with. It's called convex vision. Until they gave you sodium chloride prior to 3 years after you were born, it was turned down, not turned off. The parents don't know that. The wise men in the East kept it as a secret for a long time. To give a child sodium chloride before 3 years automatically turns down that particular function of the eyes. Then it takes about 18 years to turn back up. So you'll go through all type of images and programming looking for all types of ways to get it back to turn on, because you'll feel a lack and no want for it. Once it turned back up, you'll see that there's nothing here other than you. And that's what is the freaky part about it. Because you can't trust any form, because it doesn't have any solidity no more. Once you have that vision, everything is nebulous. Even this table that I'm sitting on, if I don't hold the focus of my brain to the point of my beingness, I can slip away into the nebulousness and feel I'm on the trip floor, or I'm rising up into the ceiling, or I'm dissipating onto the wall, or I'm going right through you and back at the speed of light. Therefore, at the early stage of mental health, they'll call you schizophrenic. For the first 7.5 minutes of the experience, it is schizophrenia, total schizophrenia. Then the next 7.5, it is the night of the soul that many sane people, or saints they were called after, had to go through. Total oblivion. But if you make the first 15 minutes down into the delta, then the shock comes of you, a sperm and an ovum, locking in a tremendous struggle to merge back into the atom. And that's where they call Swami now, master of the self. Not master of self, there's no self. You have mastered the selves in their manifested form right back into the atomic mass. And then you're holding the focus of your volition by the identification of it. And all the various manifestations of this particular phenomena are turned loose in your brain for you to see. It's called self-remembering. Gurdjieff, when he wrote it, he put self-remembering. Most of us get lost in a nebulous who, but the what of you never get lost. You eventually come back to self-remembering. But it's very, very mind-blowing, because it blows away every form of geometry that you're familiar with, and alphabet and numerals. It would be like looking at the sky all around you, and you're floating in it like a bubble. That's why many of the gurus don't like to talk about it, because they know many of us can't take that particular exposure. So they try to phase it down with agricultural language. But when you're hard-headed like me, and don't want to keep fooling myself no more, I have to blow the bubble apart. That's what I did. Only to find out that the bubble is me. But what is good about it is this. We can live the experience. We have lived the experience. And we can function with the experience, providing we understand its mechanics. And the understanding of its mechanics will always be here as a father and a mother, as a donor, that allow us to have an experience without our consent. But at the same time, we are the result of this phenomenal reaction, because we are the winner. There ain't no loser in this room. You may not take it as an important part of your structure, but when you make that journey back into the memory bank as to how you put together, you will thank mother and father. And you will remember the fourth commandment by Moses, honor thy parents, for they are the ones who gave us the opportunity. You're never going to love them more until you make that actual inner experience of going back there. You can never love your father and mother enough. And you may think they've done your dirty deal, there, give you the best opportunity you ever have. And then in this present time frame, you'd be so thankful that your understanding is so open to incorporate all the previous experiences that were nebulous and didn't have the right focus to what you were actually accomplishing or doing in the present frame. But then, this present frame is your greatest moment, because you'll be like Paul. Understanding is the fruit of the Spirit. You're not going to want miraculous powers or possessions anymore. You'll be so flooded with understanding that the miraculous powers are spontaneously emote, and the possessions are moving to satisfy the need. Then the heart doesn't know what to do with a surplus overflow of compassion. Very, very mind-blowing. What we're trying to do is to help the person get to the point where they can cope with this particular internal change and understand that all these other teachers are telling us in their own frame of reference.
You talked about the schizophrenic going 7.5 minutes. Can he go on beyond that, or is he limited to that 7 minutes?
His biggest problem is that he's going to attempt to prove his egotism or individuality by saying to the car, "I can stop that car," and he'll walk out believing he can step in front of the car and stop it. Then we have one dead person. Then you know he's a schizophrenic. But if he does make the journey through, and the next level is night of the soul, where the obliviousness and the total experience of not having any tangibleness, you don't feel yourself in that oblivion. It's just a precursor to that is sound asleep at night and don't know who you are. That's a first bridge into it. Then you have to live 7 minutes in it, totally not, you can't identify, there's not, no matter how you try, it's all black, there's no thing, and you're just dripping down. It's a funny sensation to feel yourself dripping down, like a piece of ice dripping away into black. But if you don't panic, that's the main rule of the whole game. Rule number one, don't panic. Rule number two, don't panic. And rule number three, don't panic. Because why? You didn't give yourself the breath. The breath was pushed into you when the cord was cut. And that's like that plug to the socket. No matter what this unit does, if that current isn't coming from the socket, you're going to do nothing. And it's the same way, you're plugged in. No matter what I do here, the tape reach recorder ain't gonna doggone thing to do with this. But when this is pulled off, then that's it. So as long as the flow is here and you're drifting down in your intellectualism and back into your cellulness of your own makeup, don't panic. And just go with it till it stops. It will eventually stop. When it stops, it's like you slipped out into a huge incinerator. It's like a big bang. But you gotta live it yourself. No one can live it for you. It's called a cellular ignition, which takes you back to the atomic entrance of yourself, and you realize that God became you. You don't become God. It's one of the hardest things to break away from the ego, that you're going to become God. It's God becoming you, playing the role of individuality, talking back to himself as a cellular form, taking on male-female frequencies and in different colors and patterns, 84 million varieties. You see yourself in everything. But there his stress level of it is. I am accepting the gravitational pull upon my mechanism to support me in this room on this table, because my intellect is programmed into it in reference to the momentum of the mass of the earth moving to the sun. The moment you slip into the force field of the atom, that is gone from the intellect, and there is not a single thing here. I'm floating in everything, and I can't say to myself I'm touching the table. There's a certain shift in my brain to make me relate, and the only way I can relate to this, I have to induce pain. If you ever saw the picture called Altered State, that you should get to see what holds the focus in the cellular structure. The pain or sensation, touch, is the only thing that holds back to you as you drift away. And it could drift away like the schizophrenic, not having any level to relate to. These are the things that will happen if you panic. If you don't panic, it'll eventually stabilize itself, that you can function in the solidity and the non-solidity of touch. Now, they call that samadhi in this position, and they call it sabilka, meaning the non-mobile state of the nebulousness of the atom structure to the mass. Then nibbikalpa is get up and move and function in that nebulousness to the mass. You may feel yourself walking through the floor, sinking right down to your head. And yet at the same time, you have to hold the focus that your foot is staying on the floor and walking out of this room. It's quite a sensation.
Rubber legs.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions before we move on? Altered states. Answer your question? Okay. All right. We'll start the music in side one. And if you want to move, fine. If you don't want to move, it's all right. This is your dad in you. He has all his frustrations and expectations locked up in his body and has transferred them all to you at the sperm level of your mechanism. You don't know it, and the music is there to trigger it back so that you feel certain movements in yourself. Then we'll tell you how to work through it, to recognize what it's doing to you, so that you don't panic or get locked into the traumatic effects. Okay? So the first one deals with the base of the spine. And that's the gonad area. So if you want to get up and move, fine. If not, just let your body flow. If you want to dance, fine. Breathe the way you were taught to breathe in your initiation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. private time and private labor. No private labor.
Thank you. Thank you. the point between the eyebrow, resolving good practice. I'm going to